Good Friday afternoon. Welcome in to Sports 180. Thank you for being with us today. My name is Josh Ward. Heather is out today, enjoying an extended weekend, as Joel Silverberg is here. Logan Ward is as well, and we will get you ready for the weekend with a big show coming up. There's so much going on in the sports world. We'll update you on Olympic play today. We have Tennessee Vols headed to the NBA. We have major moves in pro sports, especially in the city of Los Angeles. We've seen that happen before. We've seen it again here in the last 24 hours. We'll get to all of it. We also have an exciting guest lineup today. We will talk to Barrett Salee of CBSSports.com at 12:30 and see what he thinks of the moves that are not totally official in terms of the timing, but official in terms of what's going to happen, and that is Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. We know that it will happen. It's just a matter of when now. We'll talk to Barrett about that at 12:30. Will Shelton of Game Day on RockyTop.com will join us at 1:30 to talk Tennessee football opening up camp next week. Another UT subjects, and then at 2 o'clock, I'll have a conversation with Halloran Hilton Hill, who is heading into the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame this weekend. I think you'll enjoy the conversation, a two-parter with Halloran coming up at 2 o'clock. We're loaded up today. Joel, how are you?
A lot of stuff going on. I'm good. It's good to be here. Excited for the weekend. Excited for this show. We've got you. We've got Josh Ward. We've got Logan Ward.
Yep.
There's a common theme there with the two of you. And a member of the Knoxville media yesterday approached me and said, so, and by the way, Logan Ward is 21 years old, 22. How old are you, Logan?
22.
Logan is 22 years old and approached me and said, oh, that's cool. Logan is following in his dad's footsteps.
That didn't happen.
A member of the Knoxville media thought that Josh and Logan Ward were father and son.
Well, let's name names now.
Come on. I was the father in this situation.
Yeah. What else did you think you were the son?
Well, I'm not quite. I've been around a while, I guess, at this point, coming up on 20 years in September, but not quite to that age. I guess technically I could be, but I am not. But
well, Joel,
we're family. We're both wards. We run in the same circles.
Yeah.
Joel, name names. Who was it?
Nope. Not going to say on the air.
Oh, come on.
And for clarification, because this does get asked
sources,
a lot,
that's fine.
You two are not related, and no, neither of you are related to John Ward either. That is a question that has been asked of you, I'm sure, a lot over the last two decades.
Although sometimes I say yes, if it will help me. As we continue here on Sports 180, we have a lot to get to, and still we keep with the policy. More Wards the better on Sports 180. Let's begin today's show taking a look around the sports world. Joel, it is happening, surprisingly. By the way, the SEC voted 14-0 in favor of bringing in Texas and Oklahoma. I actually found out that a lot of people still thought there was a chance this wasn't going to happen. Once the wheels were in motion here and it became real last week, it was just a matter of when the vote would happen officially for the SEC to bring them in. But I jokingly, and it's difficult to get sarcasm online, I recognize, but I jokingly asked, I wonder how the vote will go when we found out the SEC was going to have to approve the application. I meant that because we knew that the vote would be 14-0, but a lot of people are saying, well, maybe if A&M can rally some votes from... No, that wasn't happening. The SEC was going to get on the same page quickly. Even A&M, who we knew didn't want Texas to come in, was going to welcome Texas in because that's how it works.
And just because somebody votes for something does not mean that they are necessarily in favor of it from a personal standpoint. What Ross Bjork said last week at SEC Media Days, I'm sure his feelings remain the same, that didn't affect his vote, however, in the end. Or, you know, it ultimately didn't sway his vote. And so I think I was hearing some people claim that the initial report from the Houston Chronicle and then the follow-up by Pete Thamel were just untrue, that it wasn't going to happen. And obviously we found out this has been in the works for a while.
And does Ross Bjork even care? I know what he said, and he may have to care on behalf of other people at Texas A&M who really do. He's been the AD there for 2 years. He has no other ties to Texas A&M. What does he care if Texas and Oklahoma come into the SEC?
Yeah, and I think part of it is trying to stand up for Texas A&M. I mean, I think it's really putting
he's representing A&M as the AD.
He's trying to rally the fan base. I get what he's trying to do. I don't know if he actually feels that way or not, but despite those comments, he goes ahead and votes to agree to approve the invitation for Texas and Oklahoma.
It was a guarantee. So now the question will be when it happens, as the current on-the-record statement from the SEC and the schools in the Big 12 who are leaving is 2025. But I still don't know of anyone who thinks that that's what's actually going to happen. We had another statement from Bob Bowlesby after it became official that the SEC had voted them in. And he said, we're looking forward to having Texas and Oklahoma until 2025, you know, unless they write those $75 to $80 million checks. So on we go. The Oklahoma president, he was firing off shots everywhere, including, hey, the Big 12 is last here in these deals. So we had to make a move. And Texas, it was, a 20-minute meeting. Oklahoma's meeting might last until 2025. NBA draft last night. Keon Johnson, drafted by the Knicks, moved to the LA Clippers. So he went later than a lot of people expected. I said yesterday I still thought he could go in the lottery. Did not happen, but still the 21st pick to the Clippers. And then Jaden Springer, the 28th pick to the Philadelphia 76ers. Two first-rounders for Tennessee for the second time in program history.
And first time in a long time, too. So great to see
Ernie
that.
And Bernie, the previous combo.
Yep. And so for Johnson, I think the lowest I had seen him in a mock draft was maybe 16th. So for him to fall outside the top 20.
Yeah, this was lower than any projection I had seen for him.
I didn't think he would fall that far. I didn't think it would have been crazy if he had slipped a few picks, but I was not expecting him to fall outside the top 20. Jaden Springer, I think 28, is also a little bit lower than I had seen. You see some guys rise up. That happens, but overall, I think pretty good picks for both guys. I think Springer, especially with what you've seen, and I know that we love to harp on the Sixers because of their playoff shortcomings in recent years with Joel Embiid and all of that, but I think a pretty well-rounded team for a well-rounded player.
They're drafting 28th for a reason.
Yeah, who can really do some good things. So I think for both guys, I think landing in pretty good spots to start out.
I agree. And Eve Pons with an opportunity with the Memphis Grizzlies, undrafted.
Keeping it in state. Going to be fun.
Yeah.
So wishing him the best.
Here are your top five picks. Cade Cunningham went number one as expected to Detroit. Then Jalen Green from the G League Ignite team. Evan Mobley from USC went third. Scotty Barnes from Florida State, a bit of an upset there. He went fourth. And then Jalen Suggs from Gonzaga went fifth to the Magic. If you can get Jalen Suggs with a fifth pick, you take it. And that's what Orlando did, in my opinion. How about the moves in Major League Baseball last night, including the Dodgers finally getting some talent to add to that roster? Max Scherzer and Trey Turner from the Washington Nationals going out to help the Dodgers.
Yeah, the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. Good for those franchises.
Yeah.
Finally, some good luck heading their way.
Yankees at Anthony Rizzo.
Yep, that's correct, with the addition from the Cubs. And for Scherzer to go to the Dodgers, it had looked like later on in Friday that the Padres were really going to be in play, and then the Dodgers come in and swoop it out. Looks like the Red Sox are going to be in play for Rizzo. The Yankees come in and find a way to grab him. The Red Sox do get Kyle Schwarber, who's expected to come back from a hamstring issue in about a week or so, 25 home runs on the season, but a couple of trademark deals there. But the Dodgers, we talked about it yesterday, already a World Series favorite, kind of solidifying that rotation now by adding Scherzer to the mix.
It's a good thing the Cubs won that World Series 5 years ago.
Yes.
Because they might be looking at another 100 years before they do it again.
And imagine if, you know, just imagine what happens if they don't pull it out in extras in game seven. After nearly blowing,
Cubs fans have thought about that.
For a 3-1 lead, they had that, what was a 5-1 lead in the fifth inning, and then they decide to pull Kyle Hendricks, and suddenly it all goes downhill from there. They give up the 2-run shot to tie the game. I mean, Joe Maddon would be just continue to be criticized continually if that had not gone Chicago's way back when.
Right. I joke about 100 years, but a franchise that at the time probably thought, hey, we are here to stay for a while. You can't say that right now. We'll see how they rebound as the trade deadline has a little less than 4 hours to go. The Lakers going back to L.A. The Lakers are adding Russell Westbrook with a trade. Washington sending Westbrook to L.A., L.A. sending some, I think, nice players back, but none at that level. Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who helped them win a title a year ago, and then Montrezl Harrell.
And then the number 22 pick as well, which the Wizards then gave over to the Pacers. The Pacers took Isaiah Jackson from Kentucky with the number 22 selection. So a lot of moving parts around there with that trade. Lakers also getting Mac McClung. And I love how on Twitter there are some fans that are more excited about Mac McClung than Russell Westbrook. But obviously a big addition for Westbrook, joining Anthony Davis, joining LeBron James. And now you've got another premier super team that already has a title in its current era, and adding an all-star point guard to the mix. It's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out in L.A. next year.
Yeah, Westbrook goes back home. Remember, he played at UCLA for year before going to the NBA. So big moves in Los Angeles with the Dodgers, with the Lakers, also in the big cities in Major League Baseball with the Yankees and the Red Sox, and moves for Tennessee players. Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer both going in the first round. Yves Pond signing with the Memphis Grizzlies. We will have a lot to react to. Interesting comments from Florida State's president. We have movement with Texas and Oklahoma, but that has caused other people to say, what could be next? Florida State is on standby. We'll explain with some of the comments that Florida State's president talked about coming up next on Sports 180. We'll talk about all the movement with Barrett Salee of CBS Sports at 12:30. We're with you until 3 o'clock today with Joel Silverberg and Logan Ward. I'm Josh Ward. This is 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. Joe Castiglione, the AD at Oklahoma, saying it became clear if they didn't do something, make some kind of move, that they were going to fall behind with where the Big 12 was. So a lot of this was Texas and Oklahoma. They had to do something, they felt like. And that comes back to the SEC probably thinking, well, if they're going somewhere, might as well come over here.
I think you see the quality, not just in the dynamic of the revenue and what schools are able to earn, what they're able to do from a publicity standpoint. I think it's widely agreed upon that, especially in college football, the SEC is far and away the best conference. But when you look at, I think Oklahoma is perceived as this football program that can get to the college football playoff and can't do anything else. And in some years, it's believed, okay, well, maybe they can take that step, maybe they can take that step, but we've seen it a number of times already. They win the Big 12, go to the college football playoff, lose by 4 touchdowns to either Alabama or Clemson. Mm-hmm. We've just seen that a couple times by now. And so I think it's trying not to fall behind as a conference, but also trying not to fall behind just in terms of athletics across the board.
The funny thing is I believe you're right that that's the perception. That is still a perception that is better than all but, what, 3 or 4 programs in the country maybe right now?
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's so much about what are Alabama and Georgia able to do with Clemson and Ohio State. And so you want to knock on Oklahoma for, well, they've gotten to the college football playoff 4 or 5 times in the last 7 years, and they've lost in the semifinal. I mean, with the exception of the Rose Bowl game against Georgia that went into overtime, all of their semifinal losses have been blowouts. And so I think you can make fun of them for that perception, but you're right. You're still talking about easily one of the best 4 or 5 college football programs over the past decade.
Yeah. Most programs are going to trade places immediately with Oklahoma, especially now that that place also includes a spot in the SEC. What could happen next? I read the story from the Tallahassee Democrat with Florida State's president, John Thrasher, who is retiring next month, talking about Florida State's position right now and needing to position itself for the future. He said that he wants Florida State to be prepared. He said his point, here's just a quote to the Tallahassee Democrat. "My point to AD David Coburn and new ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips is I don't want Florida State to be left behind. I consider us part of the ACC, but I also know that we have a marquee name. Clemson has a marquee name. I think there might be people coming after us. I don't know, but we've got to be prepared no matter what the options are. A school like Florida State, which has had a ton of success, and I think people talk about Florida State like it's been forever since they were really good. They won a national title 8 years ago, played for one the next season in the playoff at least. So they're not that far removed, and they obviously have a ton of history. And you have Florida State looking at what Texas is doing and what Oklahoma is doing, and the president, who is outgoing, says, we need to pay attention and be prepared for what could be part of the future of college football. What's happened in the last 2 weeks has caused a lot of people to say, okay, what's next? What move might the Big Ten make? What could this mean for a school like USC way out on the West Coast? What could this mean for schools like Florida State and Clemson, who largely lead the way in terms of name, brand, value in the ACC?
And that's the same concept that John Wilkerson spoke about when he joined us yesterday, was that the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the ACC, they are not just going to stand by and watch all this happen with the Big 12 and the SEC. All these other Big 12 schools are going to have to do something. It can't stand on its own. The Big 12 is going to dissolve, or it's going to have to combine with another conference. It's going to have to go somewhere. But you're not going to see Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and Baylor anchor the Big 12 without Oklahoma and Texas. It's just not going to happen. So changes are coming. And if they're happening in the SEC, they're going to be happening around the rest of the country because everybody else is trying to keep up with the Southeastern Conference.
Here are more comments from the outgoing president at Florida State. At the end of the day, it's all about money. It's about TV revenue, contracts. Nobody can leave a conference without a significant buyout penalty, including us. So it would have to be something very special for us to leave. On the other hand, that does not mean we can't attract some other people. I think the ACC, when you put the academic side of what it's about today against any of the other conferences, we're head and shoulders above, I think. That, to me, is attractive to some of the universities out there. Preparation, options, all that's on the table, we're getting prepared for whatever happens. The Oklahoma-Texas thing, in my opinion, is the tip of the iceberg. It's there, but it's certainly going to be much broader than what than that when it's said and done. So the outgoing president of Florida State says, hey, more movement is coming. He doesn't give a timeline, but there will be more movement, which everybody, I think, almost expects.
You think the assumption there is four super conferences?
That is a very common opinion for a reason, yeah. And we'll see what exactly that means because, yeah, we talked about the AAC position and a potential connection with the Big 12. But, yeah, four super conferences would seem like a real possibility considering we've talked about it in the past. Now the SEC is putting itself in a position to be one of those with 16 teams, especially when you could already rate the SEC number one, and then it adds two of the top 10 or 12 brands out there in college football to the conference.
Curious to see, and this is what I kind of pointed out to Eric Ainge on the EA show earlier this week. You've got 65 power conference teams. You've got Notre Dame in there as well. So you're thinking, you know, the thought for a long time was four 16-team super conferences. Well, you've got a handful of group of five schools that could make that transition into the power five level. As we've seen in somewhat recent history, TCU is a Mountain West school, and they've had some success, not elite, but they've had some success in the Big 12 in a variety of sports. You look at schools like Cincinnati and UCF. UCF's the largest university in the state of Florida. All the students, all the eyeballs that they attract, the alumni program is so great. So there's a number of schools that aren't in power conferences right now that you would think would be very viable candidates for super conferences if it comes down to that.
Then you have schools that are already at the bottom of some of these conferences that are probably thinking, okay, maybe we won't be able to compete. We can at least get the money.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, I saw this report recently. Kansas, in talks about potentially going to the Big Ten, despite its basketball success, football is still a very big revenue generator for the Jayhawks, which you're talking about a program that has had zero success since it won the Orange Bowl back in 2007. So I think when you're really seeing the power of a college football program at the Power Five level, even programs like Kansas, Vanderbilt, Rutgers, whatever futility those programs endure, they're not going to want to get rid of that revenue.
We also have this today as we close out this segment, and we'll talk to Barrett Salee of CBS Sports to get his reaction in a little more than 5 minutes. Peter Burns of the SEC Network earlier today, the name, image, likeness, and conference realignment headlines have been fantastic fodder, but these headlines have come at a cost. That cost, sounding the alarm on how a normal college football season with fans is once again in jeopardy due to COVID. There have been a lot of rumblings in the last week. Camp opens up next week. We're getting closer. Some ways, maybe still a long way to go as we are less than 5 weeks away, 34 days from Tennessee opening up the season against Bowling Green. We'll cover as much of it as we can with Barrett Salee of CBSSports.com when we come back. Joel Silverberg is here. Logan Ward. I'm Josh Ward. Let's hit a midday sports minute on 99.1, the sports animal.
Great thing about sports is it never stops. Here's another 60-second sports minute on the sports animal.
University of Texas Board of Regents has officially accepted the invitation to join the Southeastern Conference. Yesterday, the SEC presidents voted unanimously to invite Texas and the University of Oklahoma into the SEC. The Oklahoma Board of Regents are scheduled to meet and vote today. Medal count in the Olympics. Total medals. USA leads with 41. China is in second with 40. Japan in third with 28. The gold medal count, however, China leads that with 19. Japan in second with 17. And the USA in third with 14. Major League Baseball games tonight. The Braves host the Brewers at 7:20. The Nationals host the Cubs at 7:05. The Mets host the Reds at 7:10. And the Yankees will be at the Miami Marlins at 7:10. Good afternoon. I'm Logan Ward.
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. With Joel Silverberg, I'm Josh Ward. We're with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We are pleased to go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to welcome to the show Barrett Salee from CBSSports.com. Barrett, we appreciate the time. It's been an eventful week or two in the SEC and in the world of college football. What have you thought about how quickly things have unfolded since the middle of last week when we found out there were talks between the SEC and Texas and Oklahoma to now an official vote to welcome them to the conference?
Yeah, I mean, it's happened really quickly. I think way quicker than even the SEC and certainly Texas and Oklahoma wanted. I don't think that they wanted this information to get out this quickly or this way. In fact, I would be surprised if they really wanted it to happen during or before this football season. So it was definitely quick, not the timeline I think that everybody thought that would happen, but it's been a whirlwind, man. It's the change in the landscape has come. Like, we all thought the change would come at some point. I don't think anybody thought it would happen right now.
Speaking of timeline, what do you think is the most likely scenario? When do Oklahoma and Texas actually start playing football in the SEC? Do they fulfill the 2025 agreement? Is the Big 12 dissolved? Do they pay the buyouts? What do you think is the most likely situation there?
Well, I don't think they pay the buyout because obviously ESPN's trying to kill the Big 12, and I think that's the most likely scenario right now. Since the Big 12 was caught off guard, you know, it's still sort of, you know, licking its wounds a little bit, and other conferences are ready to pounce. We all know about the AAC, but you know, Pac-12 Commissioner George Kolakoff said he was all for adding teams if it was the right move and the responsible decision. So, I would imagine that because of all of this, the Big 12 folds and Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC in 2022. I used to think 2023, but I think at this point, since, you know, everybody's kind of scrambling, you're going to see essentially the Big 12 be a lame duck conference, not necessarily during this football season, but maybe during the basketball season and baseball seasons. You're going to see that that it's not going to be in existence anymore. And if it's not in existence, then there's nobody for Texas and Oklahoma to pay, which means they're free and clear to go wherever they want.
Barrett Salee is with us, CBSSports.com. So what do people in charge, the leaders of the ACC, the Big 10, the Pac-12, think right now? What conversations might be happening behind the scenes?
I think they're paranoid because this all happened behind the scenes and Greg Sankey didn't let anybody know. So I think they, part of it's paranoia because they don't want to, you know, have somebody ripped from them behind their back. So I think certainly they're having conversations with all their members to say, all right, look, you know, you guys have to be completely honest with me. And then they have to act at the Big Ten, actually has to read between the lines if they can. But I think also at the same time, in addition to appeasing their current teams, is they have to have contingencies on where to go if they add teams. And, you know, I think right now that we always sort of thought that it was going to be a 16 team, you know, super conference with the SEC, ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12. That just sort of seemed natural anyway. You know, do you go there? If you're the ACC, how much pressure do you put on Notre Dame to join now? You know, what's the financial value of Notre Dame if you add them, and does that negate its NBC contract? You know, all that stuff's in play. To me, I think the Big Ten's probably sitting back a little bit more than the ACC, and the ACC is probably sitting back a little bit more than the Pac-12. I expect the Pac-12 to be super aggressive.
What's the end result here? Because it obviously the SEC is going to continue to be the best conference in college football. That's not going to change with the additions of Oklahoma and Texas. But when the dust finally settles after all this realignment, is it just going to continue to be a matter of everybody chasing after the SEC, but now it feels like that's an even farther distance than it was before?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Texas has the most College World Series appearances ever. Oklahoma's been really, both of them been really successful in basketball the last 10, 15 years. You know, softball and Oklahoma kind of go together every single year. I mean, I think they have the third most softball national championships. So, you know, I think, yeah, everyone's chasing the SEC anyway. And then now you add those two schools, there's plenty of success in a variety of different sports. So, that make them attractive. So, yeah, it's everyone's chasing the SEC, and that's not going to change anytime soon.
Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com. With all this, Barrett, I kind of forget that we have a football season that's just a few weeks away now. Media days were just last week. What did you think about Tennessee with Josh Heupel there? You had Velus Jones at wide receiver and Alante Taylor at corner, but maybe any Tennessee takeaways last Tuesday when the Vols were there as they open up camp on Wednesday?
Players seem very confident. Velus Jones was really fun to talk to. I really enjoyed 10 minutes with him. You know, nothing really surprised me. You know, Josh Heupel's kind of a low-key guy anyway, so I know there were people that were disappointed in his time there, but excuse me. You know, he was just kind of low-key. I think he's taking the approach of tough rebuilding job. Let's not get ahead of our skis here. try to make everybody, you know, have patience with how this rebuild is going to look. And I think he did a good job of that. And honestly, that's job number one for him, is to just get Tennessee to calm down a little bit, just kind of ease off everything, hit the full reset button, and then go from there. So I thought he did a good job of that. Did he sell his program? Nah, not really, but I think the players did a good job of picking up that flag.
Obviously, the quarterback conversation is still a question mark, but we've at least seen Harrison Bailey, Joe Milton, Hendon Hooker. We've seen all three of those guys in power conference games as starting QBs before, and we've seen Josh Heupel's offense on display at other schools. So based on what we've seen over the years, where do you kind of lean in that quarterback conversation for Tennessee this year?
I lead Hendon Hooker. I know he transferred before Pruitt got fired, but I mean, Hendon Hooker seems to fit what Josh likes to do. He's mobile, but he's not just purely mobile. He can throw it. He's had a ton of success. So that kind of fits what I think Josh wants to do. But has he ever really had a player that can sling it like Harrison Bailey? The answer is no, dating back to his time with Sam Bradford back in the day when he was an Oklahoma assistant. So, I think he's proven throughout his career that he can be, you know, kind of flexible and adapt his system to whatever quarterback he has. That's why I like Tennessee's quarterback situation so much, is they all are different. And so it gives him options. It gives Josh Heupel the ability to say, all right, look, we do this better than anything else. So let's go with, you know, a quarterback that can, you know, make some plays behind the line of scrimmage, or the protection is pretty solid. So let's go with the quarterback who can, you know, sling it downfield and stretch the field. So that's why I like the quarterback situation so much. So I think in the recent past, you could see that, you know, maybe Josh Heupel would go with somebody like Hendon Hooker. But I think his ability to change his system to fit his players has shown throughout his career.
Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com. There's turnover at quarterback. A lot of talk about Bryce Young, again, off the field, name, image, likeness. What about Florida? What do you think about Emory Jones at quarterback with Kyle Trask now off to the NFL?
He's just got such a hard job in front of him. You know, three new receivers. Their offensive line's just sort of okay. Their running game is just sort of okay. Their defense is still coordinated by Todd Grantham, so you're going to have to score a lot of points. And, I know Dan Mullen's a quarterback whisperer, and he likes to tout how good he's been. But when you have Tim Tebow and you have Dak Prescott and you have Kyle Trask, I mean, that's – I know you're developing those guys to an extent, but you're dealing with a pretty high level of natural ability to start off with. So, I just don't think it's going to work right now. I think Florida's going to be really up and down offensively. And as a result, I think they're much closer to being Kentucky and Missouri than they are to being Georgia in the SEC East.
Auburn, LSU, and Alabama have all won the West since Texas A&M joined the conference. And last year, it seemed like it was Texas A&M's breakthrough year, the win over Florida, you know, 9-1 last season, on the verge of the college football playoff conversation. Is there a limited window here for Jimbo Fisher with what he's got right now, or is he approaching that level of being able to sustain success down in College Station?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's a limited window, because if the players are there, then they're going to be in the mix, and they've done a really good job of amassing talent. So the window's wide open right now. I mean, it's more open than it's really ever been for Texas A&M. So to that end, yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to get exactly like this anymore. But in terms of sustaining success, being a perennial 9-10, potentially 11-win team, you know, they're not there yet, but they're getting close. It's a slow build. Last year certainly will help, but I'm really interested to see what happens with young quarterbacks in Jimbo's system, because he does ask a lot of his quarterback. So, they're a good program on the verge of being really good, but they're certainly not elite. And I think it'll take another couple of recruiting classes for them to have the personnel to even be in the discussion with Alabama.
Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com. Final item, Barrett. It is trade deadline time in Major League Baseball. What do you think about the Braves' position as we start to head into August?
Well, we got, three hours left? Being four back going into August, fine with that, especially considering all the things that have happened this year. But they need a reliever or two or five, and they could use a bat too. So we'll see what happens over the next few hours. But they're definitely buyers, and I wouldn't be surprised if they made a pretty decent deal for a relief pitcher here in the near future.
Keep your eye out and go check out CBSSports.com. All kinds of coverage with conference realignment and, of course, football season about to begin as well. CBSSports.com. You can find them on CBS Sports HQ, free to stream as well. Barrett, thank you for the time as always. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, y'all. Thanks.
Barrett Salee, CBS Sports, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Trivia question, Joel. Do you know which team in the National League East has the best run differential, and it's by a wide margin?
The New York Mets.
Be the third place Atlanta Braves. Right. They are plus 47. The last place Marlins are plus 4. The first place Mets are plus 2. The Phillies are negative 23. The Nationals negative 26 in run differential.
Baseball's a weird sport.
Very weird. Very weird.
Still got time to turn it around.
Braves are also a game below 500. The Mets are 7 games above.
What was the stat you gave me yesterday? The Braves are 1-9 in games where they can become 500.
I believe that was the number. Yeah, 1-9, I think, is right. And they sit at 51-52, getting ready to play the Milwaukee Brewers tonight. Let's hope for 2-9, not 1-10. We will come back. With the Indianapolis Colts and their quarterback situation with the start of training camp. We'll update you there. We'll hit the face-off coming up next on 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Download the WNML app. You can listen to us on the go anytime. Be listening for your chance to win WWE SmackDown tickets coming Friday, September 17th to Knoxville. We're going to give away a pair of tickets before today's show ends. With the face-off coming up in a moment, NFL news, Joel. Colts quarterback Carson Wentz is out indefinitely as he undergoes further testing on a foot injury that he suffered at the end of yesterday's practice, according to Adam Schefter at ESPN. Right now, Colts second-year quarterback Jacob Eason is taking the starter reps at practice with Sam Ehlinger from Texas, the backup. So right now, it's unknown, and they're, of course, hoping it's not a major injury, but new quarterback Carson Wentz out indefinitely with the Colts.
And another injury that kind of continues to cast doubt on a theme that has followed Wentz for the last several years now. And it's unfortunate because was playing at an MVP level at the time he suffered the first major injury the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that it hasn't gotten better for him since then. So you hope that it's nothing too serious, that he's able to play. Because I thought it would have been a real legitimate opportunity for him to kind of revitalize his career, reuniting with Frank Reich in Indianapolis, a team that is in a somewhat stable condition. So I hate to see that for Carson Wentz.
So that's something to monitor in Indianapolis. Also, the SEC has made it official that Oklahoma and Texas have accepted the invitations that they applied for, that the SEC officially voted to allow yesterday, and now Oklahoma and Texas have officially voted to accept the acceptance. So 25-26 academic year is the timeline that they are planning on right now. Expect that to be moved up at some point. As we move along here on Sports 180 and hit today's face-off. All righty, Logan, what do you have for us today?
All right, guys, in hindsight, should Keon Johnson or Jaden Springer have returned to school?
No. If they were to ask my advice then or to ask me today, hey, did we make any mistakes? I would say, of course not. You guys wanted to go pro. You were drafted in the first round, maybe later than you thought or expected or hoped, but you're still first round picks. You're going to get a ton of money right away. And now you have a chance to continue to develop your game as pros making that money.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that they made the right decision. And sure, Keon could have been drafted higher, probably should have been drafted higher. And if he comes back to school, does he really elevate his stock that much? I don't know, because then you're talking about another handful of international players, one and done guys and top tier upperclassmen that are going to be in that lottery conversation. So I don't know what else Keon really could have done. Jaden Springer, I don't know if he would have been able to improve his stock. I think you've got two do it all guys from Tennessee that were first round talents that I think landed in good spots.
Thumbs up or thumbs down to the Lakers' decision to trade for Russell Westbrook?
Thumbs up. I don't buy Russell Westbrook as a championship guy when he's the number one, but you put him around that talent with LeBron and AD, and if he's able to be a team guy and understands where he is in the pecking order, then I think it's a thumbs up for the Lakers, and I think they immediately become the favorites to win the title next year.
I'm not saying it's going to be smooth all the way through. I don't know that anybody expects that to be the case, but I will still say thumbs up because Russell Westbrook as a third best player on a team, which he is, I think can be very valuable. He can also run things during the regular season. You need to rest LeBron a little bit more you have somebody that can run the offense more efficiently than they've had when LeBron's been out, and he's played in big games. He won't be scared of the moment.
Which AFC team is getting too much love entering the 2021 season?
Well, I think this is maybe going to change, so I'll say it right now. In a week, it might not be the case because of a trade request and so questions at quarterback. But the Miami Dolphins, I think, are a team that people have expected to maybe continue to climb, and it could happen. But I think the Patriots bounce back. I think the Bills are still going to be really good, and that's going to make it tougher in that division. Plus, there's just more depth in the AFC, so I'll say the Dolphins.
I would probably say the Browns, not so much with the pecking order. Right now, you're kind of looking them at that maybe the fourth best team in the AFC, but depending on what sports book you look at, there's quite a gap between 4 and 5. And I don't know if they're far and away a top four team in the AFC when you consider the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens. You got to throw the Titans into the mix. So I think you've got at least 5 teams that are quality in the AFC. Everybody's obviously chasing Kansas City, but I think the Browns may be a little bit too much respect there, though I still think a really talented team.
What is the best part about Texas and Oklahoma moving to the SEC?
The fan experience and the rivalries. I think adding the pageantry of Oklahoma and Texas adds to the pageantry of the SEC. I'm excited to get Texas and Texas A&M back. Really excited for that rivalry. And I think Tennessee fans will enjoy going to Austin. A lot of fans enjoyed going to Norman a few years back. And so I think, sure, there are going to be a lot of people unhappy about it, but the fan experience, once it gets here, fans are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's the competition, which, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily something that should absolutely excite you if you're a Tennessee fan, because you already have plenty of competition. But just big picture, take a step back in the games that you will see. Texas and Oklahoma will definitely make that better in football and all other sports. Texas will come in as the number one athletic department in terms of the depth of sports. It's just not necessarily because of football. That could also change, though.
All righty, guys, last one. Which NBA team's draft did you like the most from last night?
This is a franchise that I would like to see things work out. That's the Orlando Magic. They've had opportunities. They've had big-time players, and then for a number of reasons, Shaq going to L.A., Penny getting hurt, Grant Hill getting hurt, it just hasn't worked out. I think Jalen Suggs at the 5th pick is a terrific spot. And then Franz Wagner from Michigan, you get him with the 8th pick. We'll see how that plays out. But I love Suggs there with the 5th pick. You get 2 of the top 8. They can turn things around if those guys work out.
Things need to get better around everything else with San Antonio, but I like the Josh Primo pick. Nate Oates was pretty excited about that, the freshman guard out of Alabama. I thought getting him at number 12, one of the youngest players in the draft, I thought Primo could be a nice fit there, going to a franchise that has so much history and drives everything on needing to do things as a team. As far as a second-round pick, I like what your Bulls did getting Ayo Dosunmu.
I like that, too. Yeah.
He needs to get stronger. The Bulls, obviously, have some other things that they need to sort out. But I think Dosunmu is talented enough to be able to play in this league.
All right, Joe, what's the win today?
You were telling me yesterday that you were jokingly excited that the Bulls did not have a first-round pick, so they couldn't screw it up. But I think you're getting good value there by getting Ayo Dosunmu out of Illinois with the 38th overall selection. That's not bad in the second round.
Yeah, I was totally joking. I would have much preferred them to have the number 8 pick than not have it. But that's okay. They did not have the pick because it went to Orlando in the Vucevic trade.
Yeah, but Dosunmu, I like that in the second round.
Yeah, second round, why not? You got the local connection with Illinois, so I have huge expectations, I'll tell you that much. That is the Face-Off. Joel gets the win to close out the week. The Face-Off is presented by Marble City Family Chiropractic. Get rid of aches and pains in a natural way with doctors Jason and Alicia Bloom at Marble City Chiropractic. Call 766-2081 to set up your one-on-one consultation today. Start living the life you were designed to live with Marble City Family Chiropractic. With about a minute to go here in this first hour of the show, I do like the spots for Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer. I'm sure each player would have liked to have gone higher, but going to the Clippers, an organization that is in good shape, it's kind of funny that you have Keon saying he models his game after Kawhi Leonard, who is a part of the organization, but also you have a coach who I respect in Ty Lue, and then I would say the same. While Doc Rivers' postseason results could have been a lot better over the last decade, that is a really good coach for Jaden Springer, a rookie entering the league. So going to Philly, and assuming Tobias Harris stays there, you have a Tennessee connection with a guy who went pro after his first year. A lot of guys at this point have gone pro after a year, but you have a Tennessee connection to maybe help with that process. So I think good landing spots for Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson, two guys who have the potential to be steals, having been selected in the 20s. We'll come back. We'll have plenty of time to react. You'll hear from Keon Johnson. We'll talk to Will Shelton of GameDayOnRockyTop.com at 1:30 on 99.1, the Sports Animal.